This podcast is a 98 Studios production.
Hey, it's Christy. Welcome back to Do the Work. Today and every day, we will talk about things that really matter. You, your thoughts, your feelings, and your experiences. Relationships are what matter most, and they can be complicated. If you'd like a better connection with yourself, with others, and with God, you are in the right place. So glad you're here. Welcome back to Do the Work. I am so happy to be here today because we are having our third book review of this year. And I couldn't be happier about my guests. I really couldn't. I'm so excited to discuss the book, The Gift by Edith Eger. Thank you for listening to this podcast. Thank you for sharing it. I just can't thank you enough. In fact, one of my guests today is on this podcast today because when I ran into her, we knew each other a little bit.
A tiny, tiny bit.
Yeah. But she said to me, I listened to your podcast. And I was like, do you want to be on it? So thank you for listening. And thank you for telling me how you've applied the principles that you've learned. It means a lot to me. Thank you. Okay. Today is our book review. The book is called The Gift by Edith Eger. And I said this, she's written two books, the first one when she was 90, the second when she was 92. And we're going to talk about that as soon as we introduce my guests. So The Gift is the book, but even more important than the book are my guests that are here to talk about it with me. So Michelle.
Yes.
Rasmussen, will you introduce yourself first? And then we'll have Caitlin Howell introduce herself.
I'm Michelle Rasmussen, and I a little about me. I am the oldest of eight kids. I grew up in Washington, but have lived here, Washington State.
Wow, what part?
It's a town called Colfax, Washington. It's eastern, about 60 miles south of Spokane.
Okay.
I went to BYU, so I've been in Utah for a long time now. And I graduated from BYU with a degree in public relations, and then I also got an MBA from Duke. I've been married for, I think, 21 years now to my husband, Adam. We both met after we had graduated, and we have four kids. My third on the way to school today said, Mom, the coolest thing would be if you gave me a shout out on the podcast. So here's his shout out. Aww. I've got a 16-year-old, a 14-year-old, a 12-year-old, and a 10-year-old. And I think the biggest thing that if people ask about me, I'm like, I'm always creating something, whether it's I've worked and I've owned several businesses, I've developed products. I just really love to do anything creative.
Really? Oh, I really like that. Tell us one thing you've created that you're kind of proud of.
Letterpress printing is something that I love to do. And I actually invented a tool for letterpress that allowed like kind of a home user be able to do it. Cause all typical letterpress equipment is old and antique and hard to find. And so I invented a product that allowed that to happen. But I love to create really anything that just is tactile and gets my hands a little dirty.
Wow. So. Okay. I love knowing this because Michelle and I live by each other, but not too close that our paths cross very often.
Right.
And so we go to the same gym and you don't know. I mean, you're just describing your life. I'm like, I just thought you ran fast on the treadmill. You lifted heavy weights. What? That's so fun to learn about you. Thank you for sharing.
Thank you.
Okay. Caitlin, tell us about you. First of all, before Caitlin even starts, we have two really beautiful creators here today.
Well, thank you.
Tell me, Caitlin.
So my name's Caitlin Howell. I'm from St. George, Utah. Sorry, I have a cough drop in my mouth. And I moved to Orem, let's see, about 9 years ago. Wow, 9 years ago to go back to school at UVU. Mm-hmm. And I met my husband there and we got married a year later. And I quickly dropped out of school to start my own quilting business. Mm. So I'm a long arm quilter and a pattern designer. And I have two little babies. My little girl's 3 and my little boy is almost 20 months. And they keep me super busy.
Very busy.
But I just love everything. Fabric, sewing, bags, quilting, all that.
Okay, so you're not just a quilter and a long arm gal. You have a full business. And what do you tell us about your business? What's it called?
Yeah. So my business is Knot and Thread Design. So I have two long arm two long arms in my basement. I have two employees. Well, now three. My husband started working with me just a few months ago as well. Mm. And
does he quilt?
He does not quilt. He's a marketing guy.
I feel like he should learn.
Thank goodness. He has other skills than I have. And yeah, so we do long arm quilting services. And then I have a retail shop where I sell my digital designs, my pattern designs, and all the bag supplies that you could need, zippers, hardware stuff. So we fulfill orders. And yeah, it's keeping us really busy. And
you create patterns, right? Like people make your bags or your backpack. You just went to a conference where people carrying your bags around.
Yeah.
How fun is that?
That was like unreal. Yeah, it was unreal. Everywhere I looked, I was like, oh my gosh, that's my design. So yeah, it's really pretty fulfilling. Fun. Yeah.
That's so neat. Okay. Oh, I feel super happy to talk about you, to talk, not about you guys, but to talk with you. Because as you were describing, well, first of all, before I move on, any of my clients who listen to this, the quilt that I have on my wall when you walk in, I think is actually one of the first quilts you made. Is that right, Caitlin?
It was like the fourth quilt I made.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But how old were you?
I think I was 17.
Yeah. Anyway, I love that quilt so much, and it actually fell off my wall, so I got to put it back on. But I love it because I admire so much what Michelle, what you just described and what you just described as your gifts. Those are not my gifts that I've practiced yet. I'm sure it's in me because I know we're all creators, but I admire it so much. And so just thank you for sharing. And you guys are coming into this space where I feel really comfortable talking about emotional health and just the language around all of that. I can't thank you enough for being willing to come and share what you thought, what you felt about this book that I think, along with Edith Eger's other book, The Choice, should be required reading for all humans. I just do. I think they're so good. And particularly this book, The Choice, was about, she told a lot about her life and a lot about her clients and how to kind of move through pain, but in kind of story form, really. The Gift is literally, it is 12 practical, like, chapters, each one on different mental prisons that keep us stuck. In the introduction, it says, this book is a practical guide to help us identify our mental prisons and develop the tools we need to become free. So we're going to talk about that. We won't talk about the whole book. I feel excited because, and we've already started with the podcast for the next 13 weeks. That's not true because I'm putting some of them together, but for the next several weeks, each podcast will be dedicated to one of these mental prisons. So this, we're recording today, but which will not air for a few weeks, but I've already started. Tyler Patrick was the first one, and we talked about guilt and shame, actually different than how she talks about it in this book, and about keeping secrets. She says in the introduction of this book, my work is rooted in four core physiological principles. Number one, the concept of learned helplessness. We suffer most when we think we have no efficacy in our lives. Two, our thoughts create our feelings and behavior. Three, importance of unconditional positive self-regard. And four, our worst experiences can be our best teachers. These are pretty powerful. Do you guys have any thoughts about that? You don't have to say anything, but I'm just curious. Any thoughts?
No, I made notes on those four things as well. And what was interesting is that you, the first one, I wrote down the part that says, we flourish when we harness learned optimism, the strength, resiliency, and ability to create the meaning and direction of our lives. And so mm-hmm. I love that concept of like, we have the power to do it. And again, going back to her first book, it's that it's the choice. And then how do we use these prisons or these gifts to help us get to there? So which yes. is, I think that is what she's at the end. It's our worst experiences, those prisons that trap us because of our worst experiences.
Yeah. If we let ourselves stay trapped, right?
Right.
And to what you said, she also says the foundation of freedom is the power to choose. And when we're in pain, we're like, what are you talking about? It just feels like you're mean. That almost feels mean, because if we're not practiced at choosing, you know, optimism, right. at choosing to get out of these mental prisons, then that just sounds like gibberish. It sounds like you are speaking Chinese to me, and I've never even been to China. Like, don't say that to me. Any thoughts, Caitlin?
I had actually had a coaching session with you a couple of years ago, mm-hmm. and I was thinking about which one of these prisons I related to, and it was actually the first one, victimhood.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about pain, and what were the terms you use?
I don't know.
Optional pain?
Inevitable pain and optional pain.
Inevitable pain and optional pain. And so when she was speaking about victimhood, I was thinking, oh my gosh, this is exactly where I get stuck in my life. Mm-hmm. And it was powerful when I met with you that day, because I was going through some health things from post-COVID that really affected me for...
Tell us. Will you tell us?
Yeah, I will. So I got COVID in October of 2020. I was 32 weeks pregnant with my first baby after a couple losses. So I was terrified that something was going to happen with this pregnancy. And they didn't know that much about it. And so I had to have all these extra appointments and all these things. Well, I lost my taste and smell for about 3 months. It started coming back. Like, I kind of could taste things on Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
I could kind of taste things, like when I was in the hospital after I delivered my baby early December. And then it was Christmas Day that I ate a bowl of tomato soup, and it was rancid. I was like, this is the nastiest thing I've ever eaten. And I was like,
but it wasn't really rancid.
No, it really wasn't. I asked my husband, I'm like, this is expired. And he's like, it's not. And then I brushed my teeth that night, and I was like, something is wrong.
Yeah.
And then I went on for about 2.5 years of trying to survive eating food that tasted like garbage to me. And smells, I mean, I got rid of every scented anything in my home, and I have probably 30 tubes of toothpaste. If you guys want some extra toothpaste, I have a
with
lot
of
flavors. Yeah, one squeeze out of them just to try to figure out like how to brush my teeth.
Yeah.
And not knowing like, is this going to end? But I really victimized myself, and in every situation, it was like, I'm not going to dinner with you guys at that restaurant because it's going to smell. I'm not going to family dinner because I'm not going to be able to eat anything that anyone's prepared.
Yeah.
And, you know, my husband was such a good sport, and I've worked with therapists since then, since that experience, and realized like we experienced trauma. But when I met with you, it was like, okay, it's inevitable. Like, I got sick. I'm dealing with like a chronic illness, right? I can't control that. But I did have power in the circumstances, and to be able to choose, you know, I'm going to eat today the best things that I can. And I'm going to, you know, like, I don't know, just figuring out what those choices were for me. So
thank you for sharing that. And it is an interesting thing to sit in my chair and to share with someone ways to get out of the difference between optional pain and inevitable pain. No, optional pain and inevitable pain. Because if we've never considered that, again, it just feels like, what are you talking about? I can't smell. I can't eat. I can't, like, this is such a huge part of our lives, and it's hard to get out of it. Thank you for sharing the details of that. I appreciate that. So my first question was going to be, so there's 12 different mental prisons that she talks about. Which one do you identify most? You shared victimhood. And again, we'll have victimhood gets its own podcast, because I have lots of thoughts about victimhood. But I'm curious, think about if you have more, Caitlin. How about you, Michelle?
So I feel like there was actually three that I feel like I resonated the most with, and potentially also kind of like connected together a little bit. So for me, it's fear, avoidance, and self-neglect.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the concept of fear to me was just more of that element of like, probably a perfectionism mm-hmm. element of wanting to do everything, control everything, have everything go the way I want it, having it to be perfect. And also she asks in it, are you evolving or revolving? And I feel like that's something I'm always thinking about. Am I like making something more? Am I doing what I'm supposed to be doing in my life? Am I yes. becoming something, or am I just kind of like status quo here and not really progressing? And so that prison of fear, I think, really drives a lot of like my decisions or how I approach things. And I see that in my kids too. And that element of like, how do I help them get over that? Yes. So,
oh, I really like that. Oh, before you shared the other two, are you evolving or are you revolving? I just have the picture of that door that you're just like going around, you know, there used to be one up at Hotel Utah or and there's, I don't know if they still have them because I'm sure people die in those things because they're like me trying to squish everybody into one of the things. But I really love the, like, are you evolving or revolving? Because do not wonder if human beings can live from childhood to full grown adult into their old age and death without evolving. They just revolve. And the only reason that would happen is because they are living inside of mental prisons, because we are naturally, we have the ability to evolve.
Right.
But we revolve when we get stuck in these mental prisons. So love that you brought that out. Thank you.
Yeah, no. And I feel like as I've thought about these things and, you know, in her book, she has so many extreme experiences. Of like, I'm like, I don't know if I have those, you know, extreme elements or experiences to tie this to. But as I've been thinking about, like, what are these areas in my life or experiences? And COVID actually drives one of mine as well, because with COVID, I had bought a business 2 years before that. And so we were right in the middle of, you know, you're starting to get familiar with the business, but it's just starting to like get into the direction that you want it. It was an existing business. And so it takes a little time to get where you want it to be going. And I just started a new lease on a warehouse. It was going to take a lot of work to remodel, but also kind of gave me the space I was looking for. And that was all happening, hiring more people, getting ready. It was an event company. And so getting ready for our busy season. And then COVID shuts everything down. Word. So you are in a circumstance where you have responsibility for other people's income and lives. You have obligations to pay for, you know, your investments, then your overhead and trying to maintain those things. And then also that element of not feeling like you can achieve the things that you want to do because you have no control.
Right.
I don't get to control if they decide if we can gather in groups. I don't get to control where that's happening. I don't get to control any of those things. I can't even put into the place all the plans and the things that we had, you know, ready to go and do. And I think that really like took for me a lot of mental work to consistently really say, like, you know, every day I think I had to use the mantra faith over fear. Like I can do this. And it required me to then do some things that I probably wouldn't have done if I wouldn't have had to. When I bought the business, I wasn't planning to be. I am involved in a lot of things. So I wasn't planning in being with it full time day to day. And it kind of just required me to be like, you know what, I'm going to step in, I'm going to figure this out, and I'm going to like be the one that gets us through this and figures it out. And but because of that, I was able to go in and I learned way more than I would have ever just kind of on the surface made sure things were happening and contributed in the places that I felt comfortable or I knew how to do. But I had to really learn how I wanted to survive this and make it happen and really evolve, right? Yeah. Instead of just revolve in the same thing, I had to figure out how are we going to evolve this. And, you know, the great thing about that was that, one, it was a choice. We had to decide to do that. And we did everything we could to kind of make it work with the circumstances that we were limited to. But because of that, I feel like we created and turned it into a company that grew four times over what we originally started it with. And, turn it into something completely different that wouldn't have happened without those forced circumstances. And then taking that willingness to be like, I'm going to get out of my own way and just do it, even though there is so much fear essentially tied to it. And so, And then with that business, like there came last year a moment where I was like, you're now supposed to sell it. And that same fear of, but I just did all this work.
Yeah.
I just got it to this point yes. that was so hard and no one will ever understand.
Yeah. They're not going to love
the
this.
Work and the, right. the yes. hardest, but it was also hard. I mean, it was, there was elements of like, yes, please don't let me have to deal with this anymore. Like I'm ready to not have to do this, but that still element of like, ah, I put all this in. Is it, can I now give this up for maybe whatever that next thing is? And those still elements of fear of like, what is that next thing? How am I going to continue to revolve? So anyway, evolve. So fear to me,
so good.
I feel like really like drives that. And with that, then avoidance, because I feel like avoidance to me is like, if you're scared of something.
Oh yeah.
Avoidance is the easiest thing exactly. to like be
what,
able to.
What thing are you talking yes. about?
What else do what I need company? To do in so order true. To like make this happen? And then self-neglect ties back into that for me, because then I'm like, if I focus on everybody else's needs and what everybody else needs from me, then I'm not really taking care of the stuff that only I can take care of, and then potentially taking care of myself as well in order to show up in the best way possible. Mm-hmm. So those three really to me just like cycle.
Yeah, that's great connection. Thank you. Oh, that's really good. I know that as people listen to this, that well, if they'll allow it, we'll be able to connect to what both of you just shared in just this first space. So if you haven't thought you were going to get the book yet, you can hear from Michelle and Caitlin, victimhood, fear, self-neglect, avoidance. I mean, these are just, if you're human, you do this. That's just true. And it doesn't have to be something we're ashamed of. It can just be something that we're willing to look at. I kind of love the idea of, I'm not a scientist by any stretch, but I love the idea that they take things and they look really closely, like what's causing this? And if we would become personal scientists, if we would become like, wait, what am I afraid of? Why am I avoiding? What am I doing? Cleaning this closet right now? This thing's needed clean for, what am I avoiding? Anyway, Caitlin.
Well, I just loved the phrase in the chapter with prison of avoidance. You can't heal what you don't feel. And I thought that was such a simple reminder. And that is what I think I like avoid. It's like, we don't want to look at the things that are hard. And I've realized now, like getting through some of those hard experiences that I had, now I have to look at them. It's now that I'm like, okay, if we want to keep moving forward, we can't avoid, you know, feeling the grief that came with that. And I was just in survival mode going through those post-COVID years and early motherhood and all of that. And
other challenges, right? Like COVID wasn't your only challenge there.
Sure.
Which is true for almost everyone. We don't just have, I literally, when I was in my 20s, I was diagnosed with lupus and I was quite sick off and on from 20 to 30. I remember thinking, oh good, I'm done. Like that was hard. Like I probably won't have anything else hard in my life. I don't know. I just thought that. So sorry I cut you off, but yes.
No, you're good. And
you had a lot.
Another thing that they talked about in that chapter was just being present. Mm. And that chapter was titled, There's No Prozac at Auschwitz. And I loved
the avoidance.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And I loved the client that Edith worked with, and he called her up one time and he said, I just realized you didn't have Prozac at Auschwitz, you know? And she was like, yeah, we had our minds to get through the experiences that we went through. And I just thought we all have our minds. And if we can learn how to harness the power and not give our power away to fear or avoidance or whatever we've talked about, we all have that strength in us too. I believe we can find that, but it's not easy. I'm like, the last few years of my life have been the toughest of my life. And yet someone said, oh, do you just wish it were different? And I was like, no, like my broken heart is my broken heart, you know, and they're my pieces to put back together. And those experiences shape me and they make me more compassionate and more caring. Mm. So I wouldn't change it, but I'm grateful for modern day medicine.
Yeah.
And also grateful that I've been able to experience things that have helped me learn that I can coach my mind to overcome some of these experiences so I don't have to stay in so much optional pain.
Yes. Yeah. We are free to act and not to be acted upon. And since you brought up inevitable and optional pain, I just want to, like, that is the optional pain are the stories that we tell ourselves, or they are these mental prisons. They're choosing to go to believe we're victims and that life should be different than it is somehow, you know. Inside of that chapter of victimhood, I want to go here, and you're wanting me, I want to go to each of these chapters and just give a few of the insights. But when she talked about, well, one thing I do want to point out too, at the end of every chapter, she gives you tools to try to move out of these mental prisons, because our brains are very good. We got this like 4-lane freeway in our head, and it's very cleared. You know, we go back to these same paths that we've practiced, but we can change. Our brain can change. And so these tools, I think, are really good. She gives a lot in victimhood, and I'll talk about more about that in its own personal podcast. But I love what she said. When I ask what now, instead of why me, I stop focusing on why this bad thing happened or is happening and start paying attention to what I can do with my experience. That was good. Like, instead of what, why me? Okay, what now? And you both just described how you did that in your own life.
Yeah, no, I remember actually I had to change the way I had to work on when I would think about COVID. It would be like, why me? Like, why am I, why do I have to deal with this? Why am I like having to go through this? And particularly my business was one of the most affected of those things. Very difficult to still do things.
Yes.
And so, but I really like had turned it into of like, no, this is for you. This is not why me. This is for you. And if when I could approach it with that of like, what now can I do to make this become better out of this? And whatever that may mean, but really this is a gift to you. COVID is a gift to you to be able to figure this out. And didn't mean that it was easy and every day I was perfectly happy about that. But that continually reassurance of, no, this is for you. This will make what you need to learn or do in your life. And so enjoy it. Figure it out.
Well, to that point, she said, victimhood is a tempting shield because it suggests that if we make ourselves blameless, our grief will hurt less. We can be wounded and accountable, responsible and innocent. That makes me want to cry. I love that, because we feel victimhood kind of protects us, but I love that we can be wounded and accountable. Again, we're not responsible for anyone else's choices. I'm not suggesting that, and she's not either, but responsible and innocent. And then tears are good. They mean we've been pierced by an important emotional truth. And I believe tears are a way that we self-regulate, that lots of times when people aren't used to sharing emotional things, they'll say, I'm sorry, I don't know why I just cry all the time. And it's our body trying to say, oh, look, we're trying something new here. And this is very uncomfortable for me. So I like that. Okay. Avoidance. We've all talked about that. I really appreciated when she said, we disable our children when we take away their suffering. We teach them that feelings are wrong or scary, but a feeling is only a feeling. We're wiser not to try to reason others out of their feelings or try to cheer them up. Now, some people are going to listen to that and be like, no, the goal is happy. The goal is no bad feelings. What are your thoughts on that, you guys?
Well, I do feel like that's the element of like kids are the ones to me that really like bring this out, because I do find myself with like a natural like kind of like reaction to like, oh, you're fine. It's not a big deal. Just be happy about it. Why can't you just like
choose optimism?
Like, you know, and partly because you don't want them to suffer. And then also part of it is you know that they have the power to choose that. So you want them to like utilize those tools and make that happen. But I've been thinking about that based on this chapter of like, how do I help, you know, let them express those emotions, be there to feel through that so that they can then get to that next level of being able to choose. And my second, I feel like, is probably my most emotional child. And from little, it's always an element of like, okay, we just have to process through this and being okay for me to be like the safe space for that, even though when sometimes it feels like maybe I'm the one being attacked or getting all the bad stuff.
Yeah.
Because
it's coming at you.
Yes, it's coming to me, but because it's, I'm her safe space. Like she's able and comfortable to be able to release that in front of me, but helping process that, but then help her turn it into the more positive side.
Yeah. So. We get to feel, and feeling is not your identity. It's a feeling. We get to decide what but to not avoid. I really love that. Okay. Here's my next question. Is there anything you didn't agree with? Who wants to fight Edith first? I'm kidding.
I don't know if there was anything that I didn't really agree with. I definitely think there were things I didn't resonate with. Like, I've been wondering, this is a question I had for you guys, is like, do you find that like you kind of always come back to those same prisons no matter what circumstance you have in your life? Or do you find that different prisons show up for you based on the circumstance? Does that make sense? Like, and I'm wondering, because I didn't necessarily resonate with some, or it's not maybe my prison.
Yeah.
Like, I don't necessarily.
You haven't used that tool.
Yeah. I don't necessarily think that way, or it hasn't been yet something for me that I'm like, oh, I'm stuck in this thing. I feel like I tend to kind of go back to those ones that maybe I'm just used to putting myself into. So I was interested to know, do you guys feel like you, of course, there's a little bit of everything that we all resonate with, but.
Yeah. You know, it's a good question. And I do think that it's really easy to go back to the ones that we've practiced the most.
Yeah.
When I read this book, I'm like, I could write my own 12 books. how I've lived in or used each of these tools to try to avoid addressing reality is really what it is. We go into these mental prisons because we don't want to address reality. So yeah, it's a good question. I mean, some of them are much more common to me, but I related with all 12. Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah. There wasn't really anything I didn't agree with at
all. What about you? Do you disagree with a few things?
I don't know that I disagree with anything that she said. I see a few things a little differently. Her chapter on shame and guilt, you know, she says neither of those are helpful. And I actually love her word remorse instead of guilt. But to me, it's helpful to have a contrast because shame is so, it's just everywhere. And guilt to me is a feeling that moves me to do make different choices. And so I like the use of shame and guilt. She uses shame and guilt as similar and then remorse as the, which I really like that too. So it's not that I disagree with her.
Right.
I just think there's another way to look at it as well. So, but that was really the only one I could think of. So, okay, good. Here's my next question for you. You've shared how you've already applied some of these tools or didn't apply some of these tools. Anything else there that, were there any tools or any other experiences that you'd want to share that you've tried and did they work? Or like, were some of these like, wow, I didn't even realize I was doing that. Or, you know, it's easier for us as humans to be like, oh, I have got to give this book to so-and-so. They have to read this. But any thoughts there?
I'll go. So when I was reading, chapter 4 was The Prison of Secrets. And I thought for sure, like, I'm like, I don't have secrets. Yeah. like honesty is the most important thing to me. And I'm like, I'm honest. Like, I try to be honest. But then I realized so much of this was like honesty with yourself. Mm-hmm. And I've been in therapy with my husband for the last probably 9 months, which has been absolutely incredible.
Shout out to Mitch Howe.
Yeah, shout out to Mitch Howe. My husband had a faith transition about 4 years ago. It was about the same time I lost my first pregnancy. And then, you know, that was just shortly before all the other stuff. And so we have been trying to navigate this space in our lives where, you know, he believes differently than I do. And, you know, we began on a common ground and all this stuff. And as we've been in therapy trying to, like, you know, I don't know why having someone facilitate a conversation helps so much, but it has helped
us
so much.
It helps a lot. I know why.
And it made me realize that I had just kept so much to myself, like so much. And I don't know if it was fear of rejection or if it was fear of he's not going to let me do the thing that I want to do, or we're not going to agree on it, or what it
maybe
was.
Fear of conflict.
Yeah. And it probably was the fear of all of those things. But as I've realized, you know, when we're both coming together in a space where we want to talk this out and we want to work this out, you know, even if we don't agree or we don't want that thing to happen, we're going to come with love and in a space that works. We're going to work something out. And so it's drastically changed the way that I feel like I show up now because I want to be honest with people, more honest and more authentic and honest with myself. I don't want to. I think it's been painful realizing, like, she talked, I don't know which chapter, just about the labels that were given.
Oh, yeah.
As children.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about what mine were. And I'm the middle child of five. And I have always been labeled the peacemaker. And it's just been recently that I've realized, like, my greatest strength is also my greatest weakness. Mm-hmm. And being a peacemaker, I've always worn with this badge of honor, right? Like, I'm like, yeah, I love people. I want people to be happy. And I also sacrifice myself to try to, you know, make everything work out. And that's painful. I've realized now the pain in that, and that's come up.
Relationships.
Yeah, it's come up a lot. Yes. But also seeing it that way was good. Was like, okay, this can be good and this can be an extreme on both ends.
Yes,
you know?
It can be a absolute gift. And our strengths can become our weaknesses when honesty is not part of the equation, right? When what your idea of peace becomes the ideal instead of showing up authentically you.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing that. And guess what chapter that's about, where we are given labels and we live those labels. Self-neglect.
Oh, self-neglect.
Yeah. Yep. Which makes sense, right? Because that's what you just described that. She says, it's not good. No, instead of limiting ourselves to one role or version of ourselves, it's good to recognize that each of us has an entire family inside. There's the childish part, the one who wants everything now and fast and easy. There's the childlike part, the curious, free spirit, adept at following whims, instincts, and desires without judgment or fear of shame. There's the teenager who likes to flirt and risk and test boundaries. There's the rational adult who thinks through, makes plans, sets goals, figures out how to reach them. And there are the two parents, the caring parent and the scaring parent. We need our entire inner family to be whole. And when we're free, this family works in balance as a team and everyone welcome, no one absent or silenced or ruling the roost. And so labels don't allow for that, right? I can't be all of me because I have to fulfill this label.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. Any thoughts, Michelle?
Well, I'm the oldest, so I feel like I got the responsible label, right? Yes. Like, she has a quote here that's like, you may have grown up very fast. You became a little adult taking care of other people, being the responsible one, and feeling guilty that no matter what you did, nothing was ever enough. And that still, to me, is my, you know, continual feeling of no matter what I do, it will never be enough. And one of her key kind of like ideas at the end of that one was the concept of like work, love, and play. And I really liked that because I'm good at work.
Yeah.
And I'm good. I love work. I like that culture. I like an environment. I want my kids to work. I love the concept of work. I think that's such a core foundational thing to progress as humans. And so I love work, but sometimes I'm not then as great at making sure there's still that space for love or that space for play and trying to maybe find more of that balance in it, not only just for myself with like the concept of self-neglect, but for the people around me so that I'm creating an environment that allows those sides of me to show up. So I really like that.
Really good. I love that. As you were speaking, it what's possible. Someone might be really good at play, or someone might be really good. Hopefully we're all working towards being good at love, but I think where it goes a little off, or where we put more value in it, is some where we've attached our worth to our work.
Right.
Or, you know, like how good I am at playing. And then all of a sudden we're proving something instead of evolving and becoming.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
And realizing that no matter what, no matter how hard you work, no matter how hard you play, no matter how hard you love, you can't control so many circumstances that then can say that you are valued enough because of how hard you worked or how hard you loved or played. And you have to be okay with who you are with that. Yes. And then let those things contribute to that. But that is hard. You want to sometimes tie those things to your worth and your value.
Yes, that's really good. Thank you.
I liked that too, because it was the activity at the back of that chapter. She said, analyze how much time you spend doing each of those things. And I'm the same way. I'm like, if something's going wrong, I know I can always work. And it's always a safe space for me. But I also loved that she said, love is a four-letter word spelled T-I-M-E. And I'm like,
isn't that awesome?
I'm like, okay, but if all my time is spent in work, then like, then love is really the thing that's failing.
That is really good. Really good. Okay. I wanted to touch on, there's a Nazi in all of us. This is something I'm becoming more and more clear about in myself. But when she says, the most obnoxious person is your best teacher. He teaches you what you don't like in him to examine in yourself. So how much time do you spend judging yourself? Little thing. Like, why do they make that sound when they talk? Or, you know, I mean, just recently I thought, you know, I was talking to someone and they like kind of take, they take this like breath when they speak. Guess who does that? Me. I read this book and I started the, okay, I'm going to start looking. And so my practice now is when something irritates me in someone else, I will always say, where is that in me? But lots of times I'm like, I can't find it. It's not there. But guess what? It always shows up. It's, you know, I mean, I'm just going to share a personal example. It's a little, we have like a valid, vulnerability hangovers often when I'm done recording these. And because sometimes people will come up and they're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that. I was like, oh, is that how you interpreted that story? You know, but I know someone who sometimes will like laugh hard. And I'm like, I wonder why that person laughs hard. And then I'm listening to something that's recorded. I'm like, I'm laughing hard. So little thing, these are simple little things that don't matter. But whenever something bugs me in another person, she taught me this, like, look and see where it is in you. And I had no idea these things were, I had no idea. So that felt like that chapter was really important for me. We're born to love. We learn to hate. She says, make a list of messages you heard growing up that divided people into categories. Circle those that describe how you see the world today. Where are you holding on to judgment? What's the legacy you want to pass on? I also love that she talks about curiosity is the cure for judgment. Like, if you're a judgmental person, learn to be curious, honestly curious, not like, okay, you know, wonder why they did that. But I wonder what caused that person to respond that way or feel that way. Judgment is a, it keeps us stuck for sure.
One of her tactics on judgment is, what's the legacy you want to pass on? And in the digital version of the book, she adds two more chapters. She adds two more things to do. Oh. And so the title of that book is like the 14 things or the 14 prisons. So one of them is time, and then one of them is food. And she talks about basically just the importance of food and the culture of food. And she puts recipes then in that, on the digital version of like recipes that she grew up with and learning to kind of like re-put those back into her life. But in it, this judgment one, it says, Write a recipe for a life well lived. Take the good things from your family's past and add your own ingredients. Give the next generation something delicious and nourishing to build on. And then when you tie that to the food side of it, I just loved that concept of like, how do we tie what we're doing right now to create that legacy? And I keep on my kitchen. I had by my stove,
yeah,
a cookbook that's all my grandma's recipes.
Oh,
and so it is just all the things that we remember eating and from her growing up and her recipes and a picture of me on the very back as a little girl sitting at her counter. So sweet. And I am in a, like my, the family I married into has a really strong culture of food. We have Sunday dinner together every Sunday.
I'm always jealous of that.
I know, it really is. It really is great. But again, these memories and these things that allow us to kind of build that legacy and that, those ingredients that what creates the culture and that kind of like legacy you want to.
I love that. Did you make this book?
My cousin actually did.
Wow.
So, but yeah, I love having this book.
Yes. What a treasure. Thank, and I love your thoughts on it. Thank you. We have to wrap up, you guys. Maybe I want to ask you in the end, because she has a chapter on hopelessness and I really appreciated what she said there. Hope isn't the white paint we use to mask our suffering. It's an investment in curiosity, a recognition that if we give up now, we'll never get to see what happens next. She says to choose hope is to choose life. Hope does not guarantee anything about what will happen in the future, but choosing hope affects what gets my attention every day. I can think young. I can choose what I do to fill my day with passion, to dance and do the high kick she always kicks at the end of her speeches, as long as I'm able, to reread books that are meaningful to me and go to movies in the opera and theater, to savor good food and high fashion, to spend time with people who are kind and have integrity, to remember that loss and trauma don't mean you have to stop living fully.
I loved this chapter, and that was like all the notes I had. Choose hope, choose life, hold on to hope, share light in dark places. And it's interesting as I've reflect back on these experiences I've shared today, I remember feeling hopeless at moments and thinking my marriage isn't going to survive this, or my heart isn't going to survive these losses, or my body's not going to survive this sickness. Or
yes,
like I just remember thinking like you come at a crossroads and you really have to choose one way or another. And I'm really grateful I chose hope, because that really was the hope that I could enjoy chocolate again, or eat food, or use yummy smelling shampoo or conditioner or lotion, or, you know, any of those simple things. But I did hope for that. I did hope. And it took a long time, longer than most illnesses, yes. I think.
Yes.
Or even the work of my marriage, like my relationship, choosing my husband and choosing my family, like all those things, it's linked. It's all linked to hope.
Yeah.
And for me, also Jesus Christ, choosing to hold on to my faith in Jesus Christ. And I like that, shine light in dark places, because that's what Christ does for me. He brings the light in the dark, and it's through hope in him. So
thank you, Caitlin. I really love that.
Love that. I love that basically she says that, and the note I wrote on here is like, hope is the answer to unlocking every prison, and hope is a choice. And so it's something that we have the freedom. She talks about that. It's the power that we have, the freedom, but we have to choose. And if we choose hope, then hope is the thing that will help us unlock every prison that we're stuck into. And so I love that concept. And to me, hope is that she has a few different ways she describes it. But to me, it's that element of like, it's that desire, like I want something, plus that kind of willingness and maybe that motivation to go after it, to take steps, to take action. And same thing, I think when I just think about it for me and kind of like that religious perspective of it, is that it's our ability to choose. It's our agency. It's the greatest gift that we have, is that we have the power to choose. And because we have that power, we can choose hope. And when we choose hope, we can find light. And it's through that hope and that belief that we are able to become who we're meant to be. And she says the ultimate goal is just to discover your true self and find that hope and happiness there. So I love that it's a choice, but it's hard to choose hope sometimes. Like it isn't just an easy, oh, I'm just going to hope that it'll be fine. It really does take work.
it takes work. And that's the work that she's talking about, that I'm talking about. To choose hope is to choose to not live in any of these other mental prisons. If there's anything I know, I've lived half a century now, a little more than that, is that I've learned that it won't stay as bad as it is. It just won't. Something's going to change. And if we'll remember that pain isn't, I know I have to say this really mindfully, because some people have chronic physical pain, or I get that pain can last for a really long time, but we're going to move. Keep moving. Keep hoping. Always keep hoping. Hope helps us get the help we need. It helps us seek out different remedies or spaces where we can find relief from what we are experiencing. So it's interesting to me because I'm going into a place right now that I may regret in the end. But so when I read Edith's book, The Choice and the Gift, I was like, this woman lives what she teaches, and that's why she can teach it with such incredible authenticity. And interestingly enough, I've mentioned this on one other podcast, but I've had more than one therapist, and one of my therapists is in prison as we speak. And as I think about her and the pain that she has had in her life and the pain and terrible choices that she has made, I recognize she didn't do the work. She didn't choose to go back and do all these things that Edith is describing. And so I use this example because we look at people and think, how could you be so, like, how could you choose something? And the answer is because we have so much pain in ourselves, we're willing to hurt other people. It's not okay. It's so destructive. But that's why, to me, this book is just like, read it and get curious with yourself. Be aware of what's going on around us, but be willing to put that mirror right in front of us and say, which part is mine? How does this apply to me? I'm going to start with chapter one. Oh, that's one thing that she says. She put these chapters in order because this is how it worked for her. She says, it doesn't have to go this way. Actually, it made a lot of sense to me. If you don't get out of victimhood, there's not a chance on the planet that you're going to be able to notice anything else, really, right? So she puts them in order of how she worked through them. And so I do think that's really helpful. If someone was going to take one thing from this podcast today, what would you suggest? Maybe we didn't even say it. What would you suggest? Who wants to start?
Caitlin. Okay. Okay. I was just thinking about the last few things that I wanted to share. I loved when she talked about saying, yes, I can. Yes, I am. Yes, I will.
Oh, change your language instead of I can.
And she said, I can, I want, I'm willing, I choose, I am. But she said, tune into the way that you speak to yourself and say, I love you. And I think that that's the best place to start with ourselves. And realize that sometimes we're hardest on ourselves. And I know I am hardest on myself, and learning to truly offer myself love and recognize that I am and that nothing else matters. It's not what I do. It's not what I have. It's not any of those things. It's just I am. And that's enough.
Thank you, Caitlin. And you are a beautiful am. I am. So much good.
Thank you. You.
Well, there's so many things, but I think I love the concept of whatever you practice, you get good at. Mm. She says, this is a good time to think about your thinking, to pay attention to what you're paying attention to, because that's what you'll reinforce. If you're full of guilt, worry, and fear, you're going to have more guilt, worry, and fear. And guilt is in the past, worry is in the future. Our freedom lies in our power to choose what we do in the present. Yeah. So again, I think being present is being I am. Being present is not letting the other external things drive how you are feeling, and then practicing, taking the time to practice so that you get good at what you want to get good at.
So good. I think I spend an hour in the gym or exercising. That's something that's really important to me. I wouldn't say I'm great at it, but I do it and it's good. Do I spend that much on my emotional, my spiritual, what do I want to get good at? I'm going to spend time on it. So good. Thank you so much. I'm going to bring from the chapter of rigidity that we didn't talk about, that freedom comes in letting go of the need to be right. We'll just end it there, gals. You'll have many choices in your day and in your week. Caitlin, Michelle, and I hope you'll choose to do the work.
If you'd like to be a guest on the podcast, share a written experience, or ask me a question, go to coachchristy.life and fill out the podcast questionnaire, and we'll be in touch with you soon. There are no dumb questions or experiences, just opportunities to learn and do the work. Have a great week.